Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam. And we are doing this little intro before we get into the meat of the episode because we're talking about something that is like probably peak pinnacle controversy.
Parenting.
Parenting. something that is so nuanced, so layered, so complicated, so fraught with triggers across time and space. And so we wanted to preface the episode with this little tidbit of information. So whenever we decide on a topic that we want to chat about, it's usually something that has come up organically in our conversations. And it's something that we've shared insights about or shared our thoughts about, or we've shared articles, Instagram posts, TikToks, whatever it is, you name it. And when we show up to record, we are doing our best to try to model authentic, nuanced conversation. And sometimes when our episodes are a little more specific, it's easier to do that quicker.
Yeah.
But with this parenting one, we just kind of wanted to go in from like a 30,000 foot view and just kind of dive in and compare these experiences between someone who doesn't have kids, i.e. me, someone who does have kids, i.e. Amanda, and see like what came up for us and what felt important for us to say and like what came up organically. So this isn't necessarily an episode that has like a super specific thesis or point, but to just model and introduce the fact that you can have these very broad conversations that maybe don't necessarily end up anywhere, but you find out that you actually share a lot of the same thoughts and feelings about things.
And I think also a lot of times when podcasters, they have a very specific outline. They know exactly what the conclusion is. They know what each other is going to say. Hopefully, if you like this podcast, you know that we don't do that. But I wanted to share that to highlight that that's why Sam and I, sometimes we meander, we go off on tangents, we come back, and we do that on purpose because we record authentically how we're feeling in that moment. And a lot of times, Sam and I go into conversations and we don't even know what our thesis is or what our like definitive thought is. And a lot of times through talking to each other, challenging each other, we change or discover something in the moment. So we wanted to just give you that background so that you understand. There are points in the conversation where like we don't fight or anything, no. But our heart rates get elevated. And we just want to model that you can have these conversations. And that is like the beauty of nuance, is you figure things out along the way and it can take some time to land the plane.
Yeah. So we felt like with this topic in particular, we had to preface some of our logic behind this, because I think if you listen to it without that reference, you're kind of like, why are you two talking about this? Yeah, it's a big topic. And I think we've found a lot of other topics that we could now probably have entire episodes about on their own. But we just wanted to talk about it high level, and we just ask for a little bit of grace while we both were kind of figuring things out and sharing our thoughts and our feelings. Long story short, if there's something that is said in here that feels offensive or upsetting, we also just want to preface that wasn't our intent. However, we understand that happens with these topics, and we just hope that you can give us a little bit of grace and understanding that maybe because we see things differently than you, we're not horrible people.
That is what we're trying to model
and
teach at the end of the day, even though it is very hard.
Very hard to do. Some people don't like it. A lot of people do. And if you're here listening to it, we count you amongst the people that really like it. And we're thankful for you. We're grateful for you. And we really hope you enjoy the episode. This is something that I have so many thoughts about.
Yes.
But I also understand, one, I'm not a parent. Two, mine is from caregiving experience, a lot of the thoughts that I have around parenting, which I also know is very different than parenting, but I also have a lot of friends who are parents. I have a lot of friends who are teachers, and I have so many thoughts. I don't know where to start because I don't want to come across as like arrogant or assuming or anything like that. But it's like, there's so much, I don't even know what to begin with.
We know a couple weeks ago the pronatalist movement, right? Like the administration is trying to give women $5,000 to have a child. And obviously people who are not in the movement, most average people realize that $5,000 means nothing, is not helpful. And what women actually need to be able to feel supported and have children is paid maternity leave, paternity leave, time off, affordable childcare, guaranteed health care, access to if something goes wrong, like abortion care, because miscarriages happen all the time. Like there's so much that could be done that is the exact opposite of what is being done and would support women. Even just like being able to afford a house, being able to afford your life, like wages haven't gone up.
Rent, even if you can't own a home, that you feel that there are places to rent within your budget that you don't feel you're going to have to move in 6 months in case they bump it a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So there's so much to that. And I think one thing that is also, and we'll probably do a whole episode on that. We talked about it before. I think the nuance of this also, and I am the fiercest advocate for all of those things. They are needed. You will never convince me that anyone needs to have children or a child. I have a whole Substack called Fence-Sitter where I argue about, you know, in defense of whether, you know, deciding whether you want to have a child or not. And if we look at countries who are doing this well, like Japan, for example, and some of these other countries that do have really great maternity and paternity leave, they have really great childcare options that are affordable and things like that, people are still experiencing a declining birth rate. And I think there's like 900 ways you could look at that. I think people were also, I mean, I think it's the first time in history women are questioning and parents are questioning whether they even want to have children. So it makes sense that the birth rate will be going down, as it should, to be honest, in terms of like, we don't want people having children to just have children. And this is a hot take, but I think it's extremely hard to have 10 children and be a really loving, attentive, nurturing parent to all of those children. I think if you can do it with help and things like that, I don't know, you can prove me wrong, but that's my bias. And this is where it's leading to this whole conversation of, I think it is also harder than ever to be a parent. And I know we've talked about sort of like, I think there are things parents are sort of doing to themselves or social media is doing to parents. But I also think because of how much information is available, and this is not something I fully understood until I became a parent, is how, even if you say, I'm not going to follow people on social media, I'm going to really like insulate myself from that, because we know so much more, because thank God it is rare now for children to die when they're infants or young children, it has, you know, that used to be like normal back in the day. So expectations of parents were different. Where, so what I'm also saying is that I think it's very nuanced and complicated. And I think even if you are not a parent and you're like, parents are making this way too complicated, I also think parenting is harder than ever because, like, because I was really someone who was like, I think people are making it too complicated. We need to just like lower the bar. And in some cases that can be true. But until you have like a pediatrician telling you what you need to do, until you have an OBGYN who is having you watch videos about how important it is to breastfeed, until it's like our whole societal idea of what parenting involves and what a good parent is has changed, which is good, but it has also made it, I think, harder than ever to be a parent.
I have a lot of thoughts that I think are going to stir the pot. And I think that's part of why we're both, we know going into this topic, we're not going to make everybody happy.
Yeah.
And I think in response to what you said, I think there's a very large spectrum when we talk about the parenting of boomers, okay? how the silent generation parented boomers, right? Which mm-hmm. we can say is deeply concerning in many ways.
Yeah.
That's on like one far end, right? And then like mm-hmm. even farther out is like Victorian times where children were working in like factories and, you know, were like had to leave school in second and third grade in order to go out and work and make money for the family or work on the family farm. Like there's that like really far end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I think where we find ourselves right now is we're too far on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I think we are paranoid to the point of paralysis. Mm-hmm. I think people feel completely overwhelmed and unsure of how to care for someone. I think people feel really daunted by that. Mm-hmm. And that leads into like the analysis paralysis of like, there's so many options. There's so many ways to do this. Nobody's mm-hmm. telling me what's right because everybody is saying that their way is the only right way. So I just don't even know what to do. So I'm just going to rigidly hold to this one way I think that I should, and I'm going to make it my whole personality, right? Mm-hmm. Into the gentle parenting and mm-hmm. the, I could not possibly ever show my child that I'm upset, right? Like mm-hmm. they're just, I think there's some people that are so afraid there's not an ethical way to do that.
Yes. Yes. And I think that is some of what I'm saying yes. too, in terms of the expectations mm-hmm. are so
sky high.
Sky high.
Yeah. And I've seen this in my clients who are new moms, who are having multiple mm-hmm. children, who have decided they're one and done, who have older children, grown children. Like I think I'm seeing this across the spectrum of ages. Mm-hmm. So I also want to preface to what I'm saying isn't to typically target like new moms or first-time parents or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. I think there is a much larger conversation here around how are we raising humans? Mm-hmm. And like everything feels so serious. And mm-hmm. I think what I go back to is like my parents had a pretty lax approach. And I think that there were ways that my parents could have done things better for sure. And I've had that conversation with them and I've processed that with them. And thankfully, I was lucky enough to have parents who were receptive to that type of feedback. Mm-hmm. Yet I think the other element that makes me, I think, have a unique opinion about this topic mm-hmm. is the fact that I cared for a brother who is disabled, has special needs, and functions at about a toddler age. He's 31. Mm-hmm. He functions at about 2.5 on a good day.
Yeah.
He's diapered. He needs to be fed if it's not finger foods. He has to be showered. He has to have somebody walking with him because he has like he can walk, but he has a really unstable gait. He can't drive. Mm-hmm. He really can't be by himself. He can't be left alone. Yeah. So like I have essentially cared for a toddler my whole life in some form.
Yeah.
Now I know that's different. You cannot compare that to a child that develops, you know, normally, for lack of a better term. I have taken care of something though. And I know just mm-hmm. a tiny fraction of mm-hmm. the sacrifice required of being a parent and how you have to put someone else first and your needs will often come second. The moment that they need something, you need to put things on hold in order to meet their needs. So I just wanted to preface that I'm coming at this with this experience of not only having been a child, but also currently still helping take care of someone who is like a perma child. And with that said, I just think in general, people are so afraid of having their kid be resilient. I think people are so afraid of their kid being exposed to things that are difficult or challenging or mm-hmm. emotionally push the boundaries that we've kind of collapsed any sort of challenge. Mm-hmm. I think I hear that from my friends who are teachers in how parents are terrified of their kid feeling overwhelmed with a test. They're terrified mm-hmm. of their kid, you know, doing something on the playground that they don't like. They're terrified of their kids going on certain field trips. They don't like this. They don't like that. They're afraid that if their kid mm-hmm. doesn't have their phone, they're going to feel this. And and I get to like, this is so layered and there's specific individual circumstances mm-hmm. that play into all of this. Absolutely. Yet I think what we're missing out on as some of these kids get older, I think as the gentle parented kids get older, and there's kind of these larger conversations of like, why are kids entitled? Why are kids acting this way? Why are kids being so, why are they so easily overwhelmed? Why are they so demanding? And it's like, well, you haven't given them a single opportunity to do something challenging and learn that they can in fact overcome that thing. And I think something that I learned about being a caregiver that I think is positive, and I'm sure someone could sit here and say, like, I feel so sad for you that you had to learn that. But, and there's grief that comes with caregiving, and I've been processing that my whole life. Yet I learned I'm actually capable of quite a bit. And it helped put into perspective for me things that were actually hard in my world and things that actually weren't. And it gave me like a barometer of, no, like I'm, you know, I can handle that. Like I can manage that. I can do that. I can be okay while doing that. And those skills have served me in my life as I've gone through my career. I've worked, gone to school, pushed myself, starting, you know, businesses, working on partnerships, like all these sorts of things. Like this sense of grit, and that to be exposed to something challenging doesn't make me collapse. It's hard. I have hard days. I need to be more aware of where my line is. But I think so many kids are being robbed of the opportunity to push themselves and to push their line and to see that they are really capable. But yeah, so like when I kind of zoom out and I think of what the larger issue at play is and why parents are feeling so overwhelmed and why kids are feeling so fragile and so overwhelmed by the world is because I think parents are taking on all of this extra like fear and pressure that it's their obligation to prevent their child from experiencing anything that could be hard. And then the kid over here is made to feel like everything's scary. You know, like I've had teacher friends who come out and say like, you know, there's kids that they see, the kid has learned if they call their parent and say, I have a tummy ache, they go home. And it's not that they have a tummy ache. It's that they've been confronted with something. They're learning something new. It's an assignment they're intimidated by. They realize they didn't finish the assignment in time. And they're like, oh, I don't feel good. I need to go home. And it's like, no, you need to stand there and you need to face the fact that one, you're uncomfortable because it's new. And two, you're feeling you have a sick tummy because you're anxious that you messed up. That's what's happening right there. And when you get home, we'll talk about it. But so many of these parents like swoop in and fix it. So I think as someone who's not a parent, but has like adjacent parenting experience, I think that's my 30,000 foot view. I don't know what comes up for you.
If you are a parent, hi, hello. I would love to tell you about Therapy for Women. Therapy for Women is my practice and it specializes in working with moms. We don't have any advertisers here on the podcast because Sam and I have not reached that milestone yet. So instead, I get to tell you about my practice, Therapy for Women. We really specialize in working with moms, parents, postpartum, infertility, deciding whether you want to have children. So we would love to support you. We have 4 office locations, 3 in Pennsylvania in the Philadelphia area, 1 right outside in Collingswood, New Jersey, and also online in 42 states. Sam is also for a very short time taking new clients. If you want to work with her, reach out to us at therapyforwomencenter.com.
I agree overall. I do think that there is a lot of fear, and I think it's really hard when, you know, I agree. Like, I think one of the most important things that I try to do as a parent is kind of be like, look, I can't make things perfect. I can't take away everything, but I can sit in your pain with you. Similar to sort of being a therapist, right? Like, I can't fix things for you, but I will be here and hold your hand and sort of, instead of like constant reassurance that everything's going to be okay, it's like, I don't know whether things will be okay. Obviously developmentally appropriate, but I will be here with you and support you through it essentially. And I think
learning how to do hard things is extremely important. And I think it's like this convergence also with social media and technology. And I mean, the erosion of critical thinking is a huge, huge issue. I think COVID really impacted so many children of a huge wide variety of ages and parents. And I think that's a really big component of it also. And I do think there is like a bit of an overcorrect. I think social media is really to blame mm-hmm. because a lot of parenting experts just kind of do extreme gentle parenting mm-hmm. that really can fall into it's more permissive parenting. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like your kid can do what they want because we're all very afraid of parenting like our parents or being authoritative or I think we can fall into overcorrection and I completely get it. And I think what is hard is it starts in small moments of just like you don't, you know, you see things on social media, you want to be a good parent, you have this idea of what the right way is to respond to your child. You're afraid of causing them harm, so you're doing the best you can. And I think it's really hard. The problem also with gentle parenting is there isn't an agreed upon definition of it really. Mm-hmm. It's very vague. It's just like treating the child with respect and listening to them and allowing them to have voice in decisions, which on surface sounds great. But for example, my daughter is 2. And if you give kids too much control when it's not developmentally appropriate, it can make things really hard. Like, I'm really passionate about, as someone who had an eating disorder, really trying to not instill eating disorder behaviors in my child. So I can probably skew towards permissive with food and things like that because I don't like telling her no. I don't want if she, you know, my husband and I like eat, you know, ice cream and other things like that. And it feels weird to be like, no, you can't, but I'm going to eat this later. But what I've also learned and realized is that she's 2 and like developmentally, she's not even able to really make decisions mm-hmm. very well. Like she has a lot, like it's just, it's not a very good skill and she doesn't even know what she wants. So you can overwhelm kids really easily if you say like, what do you want to eat? Because they'll say like 5 different things that don't make sense. And then they said things they don't want and then you give it to them and they don't want that. And one of the best things I've started doing is really following this approach of like, I decide what is served, when it is served, and then she decides how much to eat. And I, you know, pay attention to her preferences. I care about that, you know, there are things on her plate that she will like, but I don't just let her choose whatever she wants and eat at any time, even though that is uncomfortable for me. Like, I let myself eat at any time. So it feels very strange to not, like, to say, like, no, we're going to have a snack later or whatever. And I'm a little looser on snacks. I don't know totally how I feel about that yet. But it is really helpful because kids need to learn how to eat regular meals. Like kids are not, while kids are born with the innate ability to understand like hunger and fullness cues, they don't really understand how to intuitively eat. You have to teach them that because like they don't have a concept of it. And part of like learning how to eventually intuitively eat is learning how to eat like regular meals and snacks essentially. Yeah, that's like one example that I really understand how you can fall into that. You know, I'm just using it as an example, permissive parenting, when what's actually really helpful for the child a lot of time is structure. And that does, right, that's the nuance. It doesn't mean, though, that I just say whatever is served is whatever served. It doesn't mean I try to force her to eat things. I often will serve dessert with her meal as a way to sort of like show that it's equal to something else. And if she wants to eat the cookie first, she can eat the cookie first. So I try not to micromanage there. But the amount of just mental labor and research it takes to figure out the nuance, I think that's what's so hard. Because again, as we always talk about, what's on social media tends to highlight the extreme takes. And then also as I'm thinking about this, right, the elephant in the room is that this mental labor falls disproportionately on women the research, the appointments, the meal planning, the emotional regulation work. Women are typically expected to be the default parent handling all these invisible tasks. So not only are we dealing with extreme anxiety-inducing takes on social media, but women are carrying the burden of sorting through it all, making a lot of these choices, and then often being judged more harshly for the choices they make. So it creates this vicious cycle where women do more research because they carry more responsibility, and then this leads them to have more anxiety, which then makes parenting even harder for them. And then on top of that, a lot of women work full-time. So to try to figure out exactly what to do and how do you find this sweet spot, I mean, I think it's why like parents, you know, Dr. Becky and things like that have done well in years, because I do think she bridges the gap a little more and she calls her approach sturdy parenting. But at the end of the day, nothing is going to be exactly the same as, you know, a great script you see online.
I really, really love that you brought up the example of the eating and how you mm-hmm. you have to be so aware of the fact that you do have that tendency and mm-hmm. it can come out really quick. Mm-hmm. And I know even especially right now, the stress you have with your mom, that coping skill yeah. is really there in the back of your mind as something like to lean into. And I think kids are always yeah. watching. And so I think for yeah. you to be spending a lot of time, you know, drilling down into that and being like, how do I raise a daughter in a way that is supportive of food and supportive of eating and intuitive eating based? Like, that's a really like powerful, vulnerable bit of work to do. So like, I just want to call that out as well, that that is absolutely like a Herculean task that takes like a lot of mental labor. And what that brought up for in me, especially when you started, you know, kind of going off on parents being afraid to do the wrong thing because they have so much decision. This is why I wanted to do this podcast in the first place and why yeah. I talk about nuance so much with my clients, is because when we're talking about nuance, it's not just about sitting in this space of unknown. Right? Like, mm-hmm. sure. Like, obviously, we have to figure out how to tolerate sitting in the gray. It is yeah. also about you feeling empowered to apply information to you and your unique individual circumstance in a way that works for you. And I think part of the issue of what millennial-aged parents, and I think now even more so Gen Z-age parents, are facing is social media is, as much as it wants to say it's like democratized information and encourages individuality, it has in fact done the exact opposite. The algorithms highlight very specific types of information. It mm-hmm. funnels you information that is so specific to your anxieties, your fears, your concerns, mm-hmm. the type of information that you're looking for, right? It just keeps funneling. And then influencers inherently breed conformity.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people want, like, I think a very good example of this, and I sent you the article about this, is there was a TikTok couple they're a young couple, and they sort of like broke TikTok, I think, a year or two ago because they said that they left their child in
the cruise cabin.
Yeah, the cruise hotel room. People freaked out. It was insane. And then they kind of backtracked and claimed that they never did that. And I think what's really interesting is what also really comes into play as a parent. And like, if someone told me this before I became a parent, I literally would have been like, that's just your anxiety. You're crazy. But when you go to the pediatrician, you feel like you're getting a report card about your child yeah. in a lot of ways. Like, they tell you your child's doing well, your child's not doing well. I have a very lax pediatrician, and like Peyton had a bruise once, and they were like, what is this? You know, like, because part of their job is they sort of are trained to be able to make sure and protect the child. They're your child's doctor, not yours. There is fear around, and because like even child labor laws and stuff like that, like there is so much they're not lax, but they're very open in what can be reported. What do we decide is unsafe for a child versus not unsafe for a child? Like, is so wide ranging. Like, I never was worried about my, like, I never thought it would make sense as a parent that I would be worried about, like, having, like, doing something illegal until I became a parent. And I think part of it might also be when you become, especially if you give birth to a child, there's a very common phenomenon. I'm sure this happens when you just have an infant too, but you have, like, a lot more intrusive thoughts. And that's, like, a normal thing that happens, like, the first couple months of having a kid. And you, like, imagine your child falling down the stairs, you worry you're going to drop them, you worry you're going to kill them. It's like a very delicate, fragile sort of time because the baby is so small. And people talk to you all the time about how babies die and how to make sure your child doesn't die. So it creates a lot of anxiety. And then your pediatrician talks to you about it, essentially. So my whole point of saying this is that when I, like, I've even, like, I didn't, I think I've talked about this in the podcast. I didn't sleep with Peyton in my room at all. A big part of that was because my husband and I traded off. We did shifts. So it didn't make sense when I would stay up from 10 to 5 a.m. to, if I'm up, why would I put her in the room with him while he's sleeping when I will just take care of her and we'll switch? But even my pediatrician, who was lax about it, because a lot of times the research is also sort of, like, behind what's going on. Like, I didn't publicly talk about that. I didn't really tell my pediatrician about it. I did a little bit. But there was a lot of fear I had of being judged. And when I saw the Matt and Abby thing, I was very judgmental of them as a parent because I was like, I would never do that. That's illegal. That's illegal is, like, the thought that came into my brain, because when I worked at, like, drug and rehab or drug and alcohol rehabs, like, I knew parents that were arrested for leaving their child home alone. And it's a weird thing with technology where, you know, I read an article of a woman kind of talking about how do different people approach, is it okay? Is it not? And a lot of times what happens on the internet is the most extreme takes, right, are what takes hold. And then people don't want to share what they're actually doing. So a lot of people aren't even sharing real information on the internet, essentially. But yeah, I don't know. I thought that was interesting context, maybe for you.
All right. Well, I hope that you got something out of the first part of this episode. I know this topic is a charged one. Parenting is a lot. Especially as a parent, I feel that way. And I feel protective over parents sometimes because it is so much harder than I thought it would be. And I, you know, was scared of having a child. But I think this conversation is really important. We will be back tomorrow with the second part of this episode where we're going to talk a little bit more about solutions, some of Sam and my ideas of how, you know, we can foster resilience in our kids, especially in a society that offers such limited support. And Sam shares a really great metaphor about a harbor and a ship that's helped a lot of her clients that I got a lot out of hearing. If you want to hear more parenting stuff from me specifically, I actually have a whole Substack dedicated to this. It's called Fence Sitter. I talk about my journey in parenting, how I decided whether I wanted to have kids, how, you know, you can decide how many children you want. It's kind of a resource that I created because no one was having these conversations when I was trying to decide whether I wanted kids or not. So you can join me over there. I'll link that in the show notes. If you want more bonus episodes or you want more info about what we're talking about in each episode, you can also join my other Substack, the Nuance Needed Substack, where we create guides for each episode. Sam does pep talks and bonus episodes. We have so much there. We'd love to see you over there, and we hope you come back tomorrow for the second part of this episode.